Well, let me begin by asking you a question this lunchtime. The question is this: what kind of God do you believe in? Now, that's a really tough question to answer on a Thursday lunchtime, I realise. You're just sitting down to enjoy this wonderful meal and somebody asks you, what kind of God do you believe in? Maybe it's not the first thing that you really thought you were going to think about today. But I hope as I pose that to you, you realise it is an important question to ask. And as you think about it, perhaps you realise there are lots of different answers to that question. Many people would answer by saying, well, yeah, there is a kind of God that I believe in. In fact, I like to think of God in this way. And they describe the kind of God that either they do believe in or they would like to believe in. They have a picture of what God ought to be like. And maybe that's you this lunchtime. Maybe as I posed that question, you thought, well, I'm not quite sure, but this is the kind of God that I would quite like to believe in. But of course, many people would say that they don't believe in any God at all. They would say, well, there's no divinity, there's no driving force behind life, there's no God in my belief system, and so what God do I believe in? None. And again, maybe that's you this lunchtime. Maybe you've come along because a friend has invited you, or you're just walking past them as intrigued, perhaps attracted by the smell of the food, which I wouldn't blame you at all. But you've come thinking, you know what, I don't believe in this God stuff, but I'll enjoy a nice meal and it'll be interesting to think about. Well, let me put it this way. Whatever your answer to that question, what kind of God do you believe in? It is very unlikely that anyone here would answer with the kind of God that is described here in this psalm. Did you notice that? As Charmaine read these words, this is part of a longer psalm, that's about half the psalm, in fact, and it talks about a kind of God that are made by silver and gold. You look down and you see that in verse 4. Their idols are silver and gold, says the writer, made by human hands. And I doubt any of us, as we thought about what kind of God we might believe in, ever thought of an idol made of silver and gold. It has the picture of that kind of idol from the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's a historical artifact, something that people used to believe in perhaps many years ago, but not really relevant today. It seems primitive and outdated for our 21st century enlightened London life. So we might be tempted to hear these words from this psalm and reject them completely. But before we do that, let me read to you something else. Let me read you some words from Jonathan Swift's excellent satirical novel, Gulliver's Travels. In Gulliver's Travels, perhaps you know it, perhaps from school, and Gulliver arrives on his travels, first of all, in the land of Lilliput, which are inhabited by very small, tiny people. And they first of all sort of pin him to the ground, and then as he gets to know them, they explore what he's like. And at one point, he picks up a Lilliputian and puts him in his pocket to examine his pocket watch. In those days, they didn't wear watches on the wrists, they used to have a pocket watch. And this is how Jonathan Swift describes that encounter. The Lilliputian said, he put this engine into our ears, which made an incessant noise like that of a watermill. And we conjecture it is either some unknown animal or the god that he worships. But we are more inclined to the latter opinion because he assured us that he seldom did anything without consulting it. Now we're getting a little bit closer to 21st century life, aren't we? I mean, that was written several hundred years ago, but here is Gulliver, a man ruled by his pocket watch, the god of his pocket watch. And as Jonathan Swift writes those words, he is being satirical to show how life in those days were ruled by the god of their watches. And just as we are in our 21st century modern age, ruled by the gods of our calendars, our phones, our text messages, and our notifications. So maybe this description of the gods that we make is a little bit closer than we think. And to put it in a contemporary setting, listen to these words from the writer David Foster Wallace. He puts it this way: in the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there is actually no such thing as atheism. There is no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. Now, David Foster Wallace was not a Christian, but he recognized that actually our hearts, our lives, go out to certain things that we pursue. He realized that this picture of Psalm 115 is not that far off from our modern life. We're actually very good at constructing gods for ourselves, making things with our own hands to follow, to devote ourselves, to worship even. They may not be idols of silver and gold, but they may well be gods of dollars and pounds. They could be idols of career, or reputation, or success, or wealth, or power. And even friendship and family can turn into a god when it becomes something that we devote ourselves to. That's really what the psalm is getting at. It uses this picture of an idol made by human hands, but really it's representing all those things that our hearts go out to and that we pursue with the whole of our being. If you're not yet convinced, let me pose to you three quick questions to help us understand what the psalm is getting at. If we ask ourselves, what kind of God do you believe in? Really, we could ask ourselves, first of all, what is it that makes you safe? That's a great question in today's age, isn't it? Whether we're thinking about Brexit or elections or that horrific fire that happened just yesterday. What is it that makes us safe? What makes us feel secure? Well, the idols in the ancient world were used to ward off evil and protect people from harm. But we don't perhaps have an idol on the shelf, but we might look to more modern but equally man-made things to keep us safe. Job security, political security, our bank balance. We want, don't we, to be strong and stable. But we search for it in so many different ways. What makes you safe? Here's another question that's great to ask. What do you want out of life? What drives you? What do you want most of all if you could have it? Again, that's exactly what ancient idols were there for. They would be used to pursue what was most important in life. But we don't have idols that are to do with fertility or agriculture. But we equally have loves and longings, don't we? Promotion, marriage, family, a house in the south of France, a fast car in the driveway, maybe. If you're a person who enjoys the Harry Potter books, you might remember the Mirror of Erised from the books or from the films, which is the mirror that you look in, and the mirror shows you your heart's desire. As Harry looks into the mirror, he sees his parents, who he never knew, and would long to know. That's what drives him through a lot of the books. His friend Ron, as he looks in the mirror, sees him being crowned head boy and lifting the Quidditch Cup. What would you see if you looked into that mirror? What is it that you want most of all? What drives you in life? Well, here's a third and important question. Who do you want to become? You see, this is the sting in the tail of the description from this psalm. Look again with me at the end of that description in verse 8. Those who make them will be like them, and so will all who trust in them. Those who make them will be like them. We're very good at making idols, of making gods, making things that we want to pursue. But when we do, we become like them. You remember that thing that is often said that dogs become like their owners? Or is it the other way around, that owners become like their dogs? Here's a few examples that I found on the internet of that in action. I love this last one. Neither of them look particularly happy. But you know, that's the idea that's going on here. We begin to look like what we love, what we desire, what we pursue. We resemble what we revere. So the question is, what do you want to become increasingly like? How are your desires and devotions shaping you into a particular type of person? See, what the Bible is doing in this psalm is warning us that if we unthinkingly follow the things that our hands have made, whether it's idols of silver and gold or a bank balance or a career or a family or a nice house, whatever it is, if we follow those things, we are on a path to disappointment and ruin. Listen again to those words from David Foster Wallace, the writer. He said, if you worship money and things, if they're where you tap into real meaning in life, then you will never have enough. It never satisfies. And he goes on to say, pretty much anything you worship will eat you alive. Now, many, if not most, of the things that I've been mentioning are good things. Career is a good thing. Work is a good thing. Promotion is a good thing. Family and friends are good things. Even money is not a bad thing. But all of those things are not made to bear the weight of our ultimate significance. Consider these words from Henry Ward Beecher, who said, "Success is full of promise till men get it, and then it is last year's nest from which the bird has flown." You see, people who have climbed the ladder of success or of career or of any other sort of way of measurement often say when you get to the top of the ladder, you find that there's nothing there. The bird has flown. The thing that you devoted your life to actually isn't the thing of ultimate significance. But that's what we do, isn't it? We pursue the things we think will give us meaning. We think will imbue us with significance in life, but we find them to be fickle and empty. When they're the things that we make with our own hands, they're like, as the psalm says, an idol that cannot walk and cannot talk and cannot see. So, what's the alternative? I spent all this time telling us that we are worshippers. We have things that we make that we think give us meaning, significance, but actually they find that they're empty. There's got to be a better way, hasn't there? Well, the psalm thankfully tells us a better way. It points us in a better direction. It says this towards the end of this section. "You who fear him, trust in the Lord. He is their help and shield." You see, what the psalm is helping us to understand is that the things that we make that we put our trust in, that we love or that think make us safe, don't have eternal significance. But the God of the Bible is someone who has weight and substance, meaning and significance. That's what's communicated at the word right at the top of the psalm, glory. It literally means weight. Here is someone who bears the weight of ultimate significance. He is full of love and faithfulness. He is a help and a shield. He is where we can be truly safe and find true satisfaction. That's the answer the psalm gives. And yet, looking around, I can tell you are a very intelligent crowd. I mean, just by looking at you, I can tell that. And that means that a question, no doubt, has been coming into your mind. And the question is this: hang on, why should I trust this path more than any others? How do I know that this God that you're telling me about, the God of the Bible, isn't useless like any other idols? Okay, maybe I do make things with my hands that I think make me safe or give me significance, but how is the God of the Bible going to be any better than the things that I make? When I ask that question, what God do you believe in? Why should you answer the God of the Bible? Well, here's the answer. It is because the God of the Bible is the exact opposite of the description of the idol in this psalm. You see how that idol is described? Here is a man-made bit of metal which has eyes and ears carved into it, but it simply cannot see or hear. But the God of the Bible both sees and speaks. He is not a God made of human hands, but our human hands were made by his. And he is a God who hears and smells and feels and walks. You know, if you came across someone who had a lovely carved idol out of silver and gold, and that idol could talk, you'd probably sit up and pay attention. Here's something amazing and special and unexpected. But here is a God who has stepped down into human life itself, who has taken on and become human hands in the person of Jesus. He has revealed himself to us. He has spoken to us. He has walked among us. It's not an idol made of silver and gold, made by human hands, but a true God who comes into human life and experience and existence and shows himself to us. He is a God who could be heard and seen and touched. See, what this psalm wakes us up to is that we are all worshippers. We all have gods that we believe in. Whether or not you came in this lunchtime thinking that you had, the truth is we do. The question is only, which God will we put our trust in? Will it be one made of human hands? The ones worshipped by our friends and our colleagues? The ones that are wealth or power or influence or success, the ones that are useful up to a point, but not of ultimate significance? Or will we turn and worship the God who made us, the God who is there, and the God who came and showed himself to us? If this is new to you, can I urge you to look further and look closer at this God who has come to us and shown himself in the person of Jesus Christ? There are lots of ways that you can do that. You'll find at the bottom of this psalm a little web address for the Christianity Explored course. That is a course that is run in churches all around the country and across the world, actually, and is a course that enables you to, without any assumptions, examine who this Jesus is. Is he who he says he is, that he is God in human form? And if that is true, what does that mean for me? It's a great course to do. We'd love to invite you onto one of those courses. Why not chat to the person who brought you? If you've got a friend who invited you and they're a Christian themselves, why not ask them, what is it that took them away from gods that are made of human hands to put their trust in? And what made them put their trust in Jesus? Actually, one of the great ways that you could follow up and think more about this is to continue to come to the next few lunchtime services. It's the same time, same place, not exactly the same food, I'm afraid, but still great things to think about. We're going to be looking at a bunch of questions over the coming weeks. Questions like, have we created God in our own image? How can you make yourself right with God? Do you have the power to change yourself? Can I get myself to heaven? They're great questions to think about. We'd love to invite you along to those. But for the moment, please do continue to eat. Please continue to enjoy the drinks and the cakes. There's tea and coffee coming round. And thank you so much for coming this lunchtime and for listening.